yourself too. It has to do with raising kids and raising grandkids. So I'm just going to give you a little summary and some tips of things I've learned along the way. A lot of what I'm going to say has already been said, but that's going to help me speed up. So, as the speaker said this morning, you've got two ears and one mouth, so you can hear twice as fast as I can talk, so I'm going to speed up a little bit. Train up a child in yourself, too. Look at the usual verses. Instead of putting all the verses through the lesson, I'm going to give you all the verses to start with and remember them, because it will affect your attitude toward the rest of the lesson. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 7. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one God. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. So these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And this is a good part. You shall teach them diligently unto your children. You shall talk with them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. That just about covers the whole thing. 1 Samuel 3, 11 through 13. The Lord said to Samuel, Behold, I will do a thing in Israel at which both the ears of everyone that hears it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house when I begin. I will also make an end, for I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. Proverbs 13:24. He that spares his rod hates his son, but he that loves him chastens him betimes. Proverbs 29:17. Correct your son, he shall give you rest. Yea, he shall give delight unto your soul. Proverbs 23:13-14. Withhold not correction from the child, for if you beat him with the rod, he shall not die. You shall beat him with the rod, and shall deliver his soul from hell. Proverbs 19:18. Chasten your son while there is hope, and let not your soul spare for his crime. Proverbs 17:25. A foolish son is a grief to his father, and bitterness to her that bear him. Proverbs 19:13. A foolish son is a calamity of his father. Proverbs 22:15. What about foolishness? Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from it. Proverbs 19:26-27. He that wastes his father and chases away his mother is a son that causes shame and brings reproach. Cease, my son, to hear the instruction that causes to err from the words of knowledge. Proverbs 3:11-12. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, even as a father the son in whom he delights. What's important about that is it's restated in Hebrews 12:5-6. And you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks unto you and the children. My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you rebuke him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Hebrews 12:11. Now no chastening for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Ephesians 6:1-4. Obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Colossians 3:20-21. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. And finally, Matthew 18:6. For whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. So, what must parents do? They got a big job ahead of them. They got to be inspired for the job. If you don't want the job, you don't need to be a parent. Because once you get them in your hands, you're responsible for doing something with them. You must decide what the climate of the house will be. What do we mean by climate? The physical climate of the house. The size, the comfort level, the appearance, the cleanliness of the house. How clean you keep your house is going to teach your children something about cleanliness. Emotional, what's the speed of the activities in your house? What's the mood of the parents? What's the tolerance level of the members? And of course, the spiritual climate. Is it a holy climate in your house? Do you have regular prayers? Are things calm at bedtime? Are there limits on anger that you'll tolerate in your house? I'm going fast through this. decide which kind of power to use is what parents must decide. There's two kinds of power. There's a power of authority, and there's a power of influence. We talked a minute ago, and listen to y'all say that your parents need to get together on discipline. This is a huge problem right here. If one parent wants to keep power with authority, and the other one wants to use the power of influence, there's going to be a conflict between the parents, because the parent that wants authority is going to be ill if the other one doesn't back them up and beat the children when they think the children need to be beaten. Three types of parenting. You pick which kind you really want to be, and pick it based on what kind of parents you would like to have had when you were growing up. There's the authoritarian parent who tries to control by rules and regulations with the threat of force. We have to be careful with this in the Church of Christ, because we're accused of abiding by a lot of rules anyway. A parent's decision cannot be questioned. It is the law. Okay? Emphasize the law. It's that way because I said it. I don't have to explain it. I'm the mama. I'm the daddy. You do it. And what this usually produces, in general terms, this usually produces discontent, withdrawn, and distrustful children. Then on the other end, there's permissive parents. They make few demands. They are non-punishing. They're open to communication. They do not try to shape their children's behavior. They let the children regulate themselves. They use reason rather than power to control. So the children grow up never appreciating power and the safety that's in it. And they, in general, are the least self-reliant, the least explorative, and the least self-controlled. Now, where would you really like to be? How about this one? The authoritative parents encourage verbal give and take. They explain reasons for family policies. They value autonomy and discipline. Limits are set, but each child's individuality is considered. They are warm and do not see themselves as infallible. And this type of parenting, in general, produces the most self-reliant, the most self-controlled, the most explorative, and the most content children. Now, which one of those three parents did you have growing up? Which one would you like to have had? So, we've got to decide in general whether we want to follow Eli or Joshua. Now, from the verses before, you know what Eli did. He kind of let his sons go, and they had all kind of relations with the women at the temple, and just in general gave the service of God a bad name. Or you've got somebody like Joshua that says, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. You know, you send your kids to school, they're going to be laughed at by somebody. I guarantee you, they're not going to fit in with every group that's there. If they're clean cut, the ones that wear the black and the tattoos are going to make fun of them. If they wear the black and the tattoos, the ones that's clean cut are going to make fun of them. If they're athletes, the non-athletes are going to make fun of them. So somebody in school is going to make fun of your kids, and unless they have enough backbone to stand for something, they'll go crazy. They'll be that group that commits suicide. Decide what to do if a child said he might kill himself if not allowed to remarry or curse or drink. And you may think this is strange, but I've had this question put to me. Well, what if this was your child? And would you stand up and not let them remarry if they said, I'm so distraught, I'll kill myself if you don't let me marry so or so? What are you going to do? What about the child that goes to school and he comes home from college and he learns to use his French? I had a professor taught soils class in Auburn, and he said when he went home from school, he decided he'd use some of his little words that he had learned at school around his daddy. His daddy listened to him and said, when his daddy realized what he was doing, he said, look, son, he said, I've got field hands out back that talk like that. If that's the way you're going to talk, I'll let you go out and work with them, and I'll find one of these field hands and send to school to appreciate learning how to talk right. And he found out real quick his daddy wasn't going to put up with that kind of French. What about those that drink? I know a family that son went to school and he came home, he learned how to drink. And they accepted it. And this is Church of Christ people. So what would you do? Decide whether to give a child a chance to, let's see, to fail or not. I work in agriculture. We subsidize a lot of farmers that need to go out of business, but we give them enough money to keep them in business. One thing we don't do is we don't feel like every farmer needs a chance to fail. But the truth is that every human being needs to know that they can fail. They need to know there's a chance they're not going to make it in whatever they do. Makes them try harder. Might that mean you try harder too? Parents will set the tone of the class. Nurture and admonition must be possessed before use. How are you going to bring a child up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord if you don't have it yourself? You're going to tell them how to do it? That's what the authoritarian parent does. Give freedom to use the knowledge just like God gives us. God gives us a chance to fail. We're free will people. As is mentioned before, give your children the freedom to try out your doctrine to see if your doctrine works. If your doctrine doesn't work, do your children need to follow it? No. You've got to show your children that your doctrine is the best doctrine for them to live by. Give them something to live for. Let them see it in your life. Be on the child's team. Be on the child's team. Children need to know that people will listen to them, that people are on their side. They don't need to feel outcast. When correcting, use rocks and sticks, but never shame. Beat them, kick them, whatever you want to do. But don't use shame. If you use shame on your children, I can't really explain how this happens, but the people that study personality, they get into this and they love this, and they'll tell you that if you control a child with shame, you're going to hurt that personality, and it will come back as he is an adult, and he may never get over it. And it will affect his marriage, it will affect the way he raises his kids. We're talking about starting a vicious cycle. It'll just keep going in a cycle. Don't use shame. If I've got even my little grandkids or whatever, I don't want to see anybody shame them. I don't want to see somebody tell them they're bad. If they're not doing right, tell them what they're supposed to do right and whip them if you have to. But don't tell them that they're bad, because then they may start thinking, well, I'm bad. I'm bad. Nine times out of ten, they tell me I'm bad. One time they tell me I'm good, so what am I supposed to believe about myself? Parents will pick the subject matter of the class. Censorship. Can't we find something better to watch than that? I never knew about censorship until my dad asked my mother to find another station to watch when All in the Family came on years and years ago. When that was a liberal show, All in the Family, when it first came on. And all Daddy said was, can't we find something better to watch than that? Well, what that one statement did, it planted in my head that everything that came on the TV was not something I was supposed to watch and soak up. But what I was supposed to do was to make a judgment on what was on TV. That's all he had to say. Can't we find something better to watch than that? And I've never watched TV the same since. I've seen a lot of junk that was on TV, but I knew it was junk. And I knew I wasn't supposed to absorb that stuff, but make a judgment about it. And I tried to pass that on. That's what parents are supposed to be for. The carburetor lesson. Daddy wanted me to be inquisitive and know how to rework the carburetor. Don't need to know how to rework a carburetor now, but back then we didn't know how to rework a carburetor. If you ever rework a carburetor, you know that before you get into the carburetor, you've got to take the linkage off on the outside. And somehow it's a mess. Well, I didn't pay attention to the linkage. I was too busy trying to get into the part, the middle part. So when I got ready to put it back together, I got everything together except the linkage. I learned a lesson, a very valuable lesson, to pay attention. I've used this expression a lot of times. I'm not a real smart person, but I am a professional observer. I observe things, and that helped me along the way. One thing it taught me was, if I'm going off to a lady's house and there she's going to put me up to run a revival, I want to see how she makes that bed up before she pulls the covers back. There's about six different ways you can throw a bedspread on the bed. Do you put it on top of the pillows or under the pillows? Do you put a little crack under the pillows, or just how do you do it? So that carburetor lesson from my childhood made me look at how bed was made up before the lady picked, and I hope I get there before she turns the covers down, because I'm lost then. But there's so many little things that we have a chance to pass on that you never know how it's going to help you later in life. choices between good and evil, that ought not to be. Because we ought to know what the choices are between good and evil and live it in front of our kids. But here's where we do need to teach them. The harder choices are not for a Christian between good and evil, but it's between what's good, what's better, and what's best. What's the good thing to do with our time? What's the better thing to do with our time? What is the best thing to do with our time? That's the hardest choices. Good and evil, that ought to be the easy part. What do they see us do with our time? Are we flitting our time away? Oh, we're staying busy, all right. But is it the worthwhile stuff we're doing? Or are we just staying busy and passing the time away between meals? The best lessons may be from the children. We must have an attitude to learn from them, like how to wear a hat. Now, some of y'all probably wondered, what in the world am I doing with this hat? How many ways can you wear this hat? My son, Brad Prince, taught me a lesson that I had never forgotten about how to wear a hat. Well, this is a funny-looking hat, very warm hat. Conventionally, you wear it like this. If it's real cold, you wear it like this. Okay? Some of his friends were over, and he says, we want to go out and walk the neighborhood. You got something warm to put on? I said, yeah, I'll get him this hat. So he comes in. He didn't wear it either one of those ways. He flipped the top down, turned it around backwards, and put the top down his neck and pulled the bottom up like this. So he comes in, and all I see is his nose because his face is smaller than mine. And all I see is he's looking like this because he can't see out the top. And I could have shamed him. I could have told him he was crazy. I could have asked him where in the world did he learn to do something like that. But I stood there and I looked at him. And at that time, we were walking the neighborhood for our help. Do you believe I started wearing this hat that way? And it was actually warmer. The boy taught me the better way to wear the hat was unconventional. And ever since then, whenever they had done something, I'd always look and see, is that better than the way I would have done it? Because I'm pretty conventional. I do things the way they're supposed to be done. They do things unorthodox. But I have learned from them from that one thing. Watch your kids, learn from them, and then brag on them. Talk about building confidence and building a bond. That's the way to do it. Want kids and grandkids safe in church, just like God wants of us. You think about these kids growing up. You want them to go to church so bad, but you can't make them. You've got to lead them into church. God's got that same feeling about me and you. Learn how good it feels when one clings to you and how good we make Jesus feel when we cling to Him. I got a special relationship with my grandkids. And I've worked hard. I've given up a lot of things to get that relationship. And one of them is when they run to me in the crowd. I paid my dues. I paid the price to get that kind of relationship. And it feels so good. And you know, God gave us our feelings. He feels the same thing we feel. Can you imagine how good Jesus feels when we run to Him and we hang on to Him when the devil's tempting us to come away and to get into sin and we cling to Jesus? Can you imagine how good we make our Savior feel when we run to Him in a crowd and we cling to Him? So many things I've learned from these kids and grandkids. Learn how quick their rambunctiousness can turn to despair. We cannot allow that to happen in the judgment. I got grandkids that bounce off the wall. They're pretty loose, you know. We don't try to keep real tight reins on them because we want them to be creative. Okay, so they get rambunctious. They bounce off the walls. When they get hurt in an instant, all that rambunctiousness goes to despair when they get hurt. Now, you think about, I mentioned a minute ago about marriage. I'm just going to use that specifically. You think about the person that says, if you don't go along with me remarrying mom and dad, I'm going to kill myself. And in that pride, they get in your face and they say, I'm going to do it anyway. Can you imagine in the judgment day when God says, look, you know, what I told you about adultery, you're not getting into heaven. Can you imagine that despair that they're going to have? I've learned that watching my grandkids, no matter how rambunctious they are, when they get hurt, that despair in their voice, it tears me up. I can't stand it. We need to have this attitude about what we back our children up in, because on the judgment day, when every knee shall bow, and the judgment is given to all the most proud people in the world, if they're going to hell, there's going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. The Bible tells us it's that way. So we've got to stand our ground now so we don't have to stand there and see that despair on their face on that day. One grandparent quit smoking, smoked for a long time. His grandkids came along and he laid cigarettes down because he wanted to be a good example. How was he going to teach his kids to stay off drugs when he's on nicotine himself? There was a couple that considered, I don't know if they actually did it, but they actually considered not watching R-rated movies in front of their kids once their kids got old enough to start repeating the words that they were seeing on the movies in the household. Now tell me how much sense that makes. I mean, really, why do you got to let your kids get old enough to start hearing that junk before you realize maybe we don't need to be getting these R-rated movies? Learn how to bond with another by watching their eyes. It's a narrow window. One way I have bonded with my grandkids is I give them complete attention and I watch their eyes. I love to watch their eyes. If you really get on the kid's team, you hold him in your arms. He can't walk. He can't reach up and get stuff, but that little mind is just so creative and it's so curious. It wants to see things, and if you'll watch those eyes, you know what he's looking at and what he wants to go to. And that's how they'll bond to you. That's why they run to you in the crowd. A lot of people pick up a baby, and they want to treat it like a doll. They'll throw it up in the air and see it squeal, and they'll swing it this way, and they'll swing it that way. And when the kid gets old enough, he'll start running from people like that. That's the people he wants to get away from. And he'll run to somebody that's safe. You hear what I'm saying? He'll run to somebody that will look at him and give him what he wants. Now, maybe there's a connection there between the way we work with church people, make to look and see what it is they want, what they need. Everybody's got a need. We can meet that need, we'll have that bond. And it's a narrow window. Three grandkids that I bonded with the best, there was a narrow window somewhere between 4 and 6 months of age that I made a bond with them that is still there. I don't treat them that much different now than anybody else treats them. But at that time, I was there to make that bond. So maybe in a young person or a young convert, maybe there's that same narrow window that we need to see as a church person to fit a need or to help someone. You know, the folks that are in Sunday school, they got this down pat. They're going to get these kids in Sunday school and they're going to whine. I'm just going to use this expression, whine and dine them. They're going to feed them and activities and all this stuff. They're going to get them when they're young. Because they know this. They know this. I'm not saying we can do that same thing, but I'm saying recognize that in most people there's a narrow window when we can get them, when we can make a bond with them. We need to jump all over that time. We don't need to be out, as David said, on the ball field when it's that narrow window with our kids. Learn the importance of being there. Just simply be around and to be there. Life's lessons best learned in the home. It's okay to be hysteric, but not historic. What do children see when mom and daddy fight? These two guys were talking at work, and one said, we had a big fight at home last night, and my wife went historic on it. And the second one says, you mean she went hysteric on you? And he said, no, she went historic on me. She told me everything I've done wrong for the last 15 years. See, some people fight like that. Parent and kids see that, and they think that's the way you're supposed to fight. You teach them in the home. Teach the truest living example of forgiveness. To live one day at a time with those who have the best opportunity to rub you the wrong way. Let each day start fresh. Don't carry over. How long did the Bible say you could be angry? I saw that till the sun went down. There's tremendous logic behind that. There's great logic behind that. Live that in front of your kids so they'll know how to do it. Don't build walls. It's easier to build them than to tear them down. And non-Christians usually don't hang around long enough for the demolition. What was spoken a minute ago about not being unequally yoked together, this is so true. This is the big danger when you're hooked with somebody that doesn't have your same belief in being married and staying married. They don't hang around to tear the walls down. They leave. They find somebody else. The three best priorities to teach from the cradle is value people more than things. Guess what number two is? Value people more than things. And I won't even let you guess what number three is. value people more than things and let your kids see it when you talk around the kitchen table. Words of caution. People, this has already been stated, especially little people, don't need to be worshipped, just love them to death. And there is a difference. There is a difference. If you worship them, it gives them the idea they can do anything and still be accepted because of, quote, who I am. I'm little Billy. I'm little Sally. Everybody loves me no matter what I do. If they grow up that way, they're going to give their husband or wife pure fits. This attitude will someday come between the person worshiped and God and true Christian service. The true value of the family, a teaching tool for life and life's lessons. It teaches everyone. At birth, the baby begins to learn the mood of the parents. Later, it learns the mood of the home. Then, it learns the mood of the Lord by the parents' reactions. Then, the parents begin to learn many things they'd only heard about being patient, long-suffering, obligations, forgiveness, so on and so forth. Because they don't want to be hypocritical in the eyes of their children. So it makes the parents better. Then the parents learn the application of God's commandments through the children. When they see good and bad in the child and see good and bad happen to the child, then they realize how God feels when He sees good and bad in us. Then we appreciate God's love even more as a parent because He is ours. Something worth passing on. Good equipment for living. We used this passage already. David did, 2 Timothy 3:16-17. All scriptures given by inspiration of God, that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Now look at this part. There's two words I want you to get. Thoroughly furnished. Our job as parents is to give our children what they need to get through life. Our job is to give them the equipment that they need. The devil's going to pound them. He's going to ridicule them. He's going to make fun of them. But we've got to give them strength. And I'm going to leave you with this last little bit right here. We want to teach our children the same thing God wants in us. Resilience. Bounce back. Take a licking and keep on ticking. That's what He wants out of our children. Because we can't be there all the time. We can't make every judgment for them. We can't take the heat from them or them. They've got to be able to stand the ridicule, the sarcasm, the temptations, all this kind of stuff. We want them to be resilient, not vulnerable. So that's one reason. Proverbs talks about the rod. It talks about chastening. The Old Testament talks about chastening. We've got to learn how to take chastening ourselves. I'll be glad when the Lord gets through chastening me. I don't know how long it's going to be. I'm 58 years old, and I think He's bearing down on me harder than He ever has. I don't know about you. Many of you probably feel the same way. So I'm ready for it to quit. But I don't see it happening anytime soon. So these are just my thoughts, things I've tried to teach them, but I've learned more from my kids and more from my grandkids than I'm afraid that I've been able to teach them. So I'm sure most of y'all feel the same way. Thank you.